In the second part of our Saturday double bill, I'm joined by Johnny Hudson and Aaron Keelock of Silver Roller. And
freedom's got a hold on. It's got to look good on a bass drum skin. You've got to be cool. Same with it every night on stage. And what was the other one? Wasn't there another?
Jaron Johnson always said, it's got to be something the guys dig and girls love. And it's kind of like, yeah, it's pretty true.
Okay, we've just been jamming. There's a little studio up in Liverpool that we use in a repurposed school called Studio 5, which is amazing. I love the idea that this school is, you know, is no longer a school, so people have bought it out. And we just finished a rehearsal session, and we had an hour left of studio time. And it was like, that, should we call it a day? Or should we use the hour? And then I think Joe laid that beat down.
No, I played that riff, and I remember Joe very distinctively. He everyone I've ever played that riff with always plays just like a standard street 4/4 beat on it, and Joe did the push on the snare, and I don't know why, it just gave it some extra life, and everyone was like, I don't know, it just captured the energy, which is kind of what writing songs is about, isn't it? Yeah, I mean, I've known Jared since 2018. I met him in Nam.
Not Vietnam.
I was just about to say your lighting is lovely.
Lovely.
Christ, we've gone really light now.
I like how you've done it with the plant in the corner. It looks nice.
Oh, there we go.
Are you in the snug?
No. This is
he's trying to compete with my one. He's got to go for it this time, you know. Well, I heard your single. It's a great first single.
Thank you.
Thanks, man. Yeah, we went for the heavy approach this time around, didn't we? I think that was like a Velvet Revolver theory, that just go with your heaviest song as the lead single.
So I'm here with Johnny and Aaron of Silver Roller. Thank you very much for joining me, guys.
It's good to be with you again, man. It's been a while.
It has been a while. It's just under a year ago, you guys were on the bands to look out for video, and people will be going, hang on a second, I kind of recognize these people, but weren't they called Keylock last time? And I was obviously yes. So that's the elephant in the room. So what's the thing
still is called Keylock.
What's the reason behind the change to Silver Roller, guys?
We were being managed by a management company who had kind of had an idea for what they wanted from it, which didn't necessarily match up with what we wanted from it. And we released some music, but we released music actually like a week before we went into lockdown. Shine On Me came out. It got some great coverage. Everyone seemed to love it. And then all of a sudden, we couldn't do anything with it. And then we kind of sat in lockdown for 2 years and just thought, well, you know, let's move in the way that we want to move. So we did.
Any particular reason for the name Silver Roller? It's an unusual name.
You know what? When we said let's have a band name, you know, let's have a proper band name, everyone starts throwing kind of ideas at each other. And I had kind of said, we should really come up with like an Aerosmith, which is obviously really easy to do, isn't it?
Just great idea.
And everyone seemed that happy with the idea that we were going to have that kind of name that didn't really mean anything. But then you've got to come up with it, you know?
In today's world, it's so difficult.
Yeah, a name now.
Yeah, yeah. Like if you think about Supertramp.
Yeah.
You know, like try and think of that kind of thing. And I'd just watched an interview with Paul Rogers. I'm into that guy, if anyone hasn't heard. He said that when he was naming Bad Company, there was a movie out at the time, old Western film, I think in about 1970-71, called Bad Company, and the poster had on it Beware of Bad Company, and he thought, oh, that's great, you know, I'm going to write a song. And then when he came to naming the band, he picked up the phone to Mick Rouse and said, "Bad Company." And I thought, oh, Western movies, that's pretty good. Let's see if there's anything in that. So I was looking through lists of Western films from like the 20s to now, and Silver kept popping up.
Mm.
Like Knights of the Silver Rider, Three Silver Dollars, The Silver Lords, yada, yada, yada. And I was like, oh, Silver's pretty good. I like that. And since every new rock band is called Black Something or Something Something Black,
yeah.
It was like, that's, it's almost like the kind of flip side in it, the like the antithesis of that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think it was Joe, was it Joe? That's a, mm-hmm. We should have like a motion
thing.
It should sound like it's moving. And then Silver Roller just kind of became the, oh yeah. And to me, it sounds like something like a 50s Cadillac or something, you know,
yeah.
Kind of rolling around Chicago in like 55 or like Muddy and, you know, Leonard Chess in it or something, you know? So yeah, we kind of want, when you say it out loud, you go, that's pretty good. And then we all kind of said, yeah, that's got to be the one. And Aaron quite rightly pointed out that it's got to look good on a bass drum skin. You've got to be cool. Same with it every night on stage. And yeah. What was the other one? Wasn't there another?
Was it Jaron Johnson always said, it's got to be something that guys dig and girls love. And it's kind of like, yeah, it's pretty true.
Yeah. No, I agree. When I saw the name, I thought, you know, it feels like, ironically, something from like an old 70s movie or something, or like, as you mentioned there, like a vintage car, like yeah. Just getting in my Silver Roller.
yeah. Well, that was the thing as well. And the more we kind of thought, that's pretty good, that it was kind of like, it's kind of timeless. It sounds a little bit ethereal. It sounds...
Yeah.
There's a little kind of tinge of Americana to it, which, you know, we quite like.
I think it's like, it's meaningless, but it has like strong imagery with it.
Yes.
I mean, it kind of like, when you say it, you kind of get like, rather than a meaning to the word, you just get like images straight away to when people say it, which is kind of, it kind of means something to everybody.
And as well as that, in the modern age, when you Google Keylock, there's a million things come up for it.
Yes.
And one of the things that we'd said was, we need unique branding. We need an instant. Mm. That's what that is. And when we Googled Silver Roller, there was like a Japanese pocket knife from the 90s, and that was it. And it was like, wow, no one's thought of this before. You must be kidding. And then, you know, you check the socials, you check Spotify, and you think, right, that's the one. Because it's important now, you know, you need that unique branding. And in a day, like, you, again, back, I suppose back to Paul Rodgers, or even like The Who, you couldn't call a band The Who now, do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Obviously, because The Who have happened, but like, or Free, you know what I mean? Like, you couldn't get away with names like that now, because it's so ambivalent. Mm-hmm. And
yeah.
you'd never find it anywhere.
Mm. For those that are new to you guys, I'm sure there'll be quite a lot of people that will be finding you, particularly on the upcoming tour. How would you kind of define and describe the band's sound? Like, who are you?
Awful. Aaron, go.
I think it's kind of like, it's quite hard to say. I mean, the only thing you can really just say is it's rock and roll, and it's kind of, I think it's timeless. Like, you know, like calling it 70s kind of, I don't know, puts like a, it's kind of like a roof on it. I think that, like, when you listen to the record, there's a lot of different influences you can hear in there. I think obviously we, on some of the songs and some of the parts, you can hear we wear influences on our sleeve, but I also think we found a lot more of ourselves as songwriters now and as a band, like, coming together. I think we were a lot more experimental on this, and we've let things kind of flow in the studio. So I think it's just kind of like the definition of rock and roll, and the thing of, like, you used to get like a guy that was into jazz and the guy that was into like marching bands and then a guy that was into soul and blues, and everyone came together and made something that was unique. And I think from the idea of rock and roll, whether it's very much a rock and roll record in that sense, we all kind of come together with different ideas and influences and just kind of see where the song goes with it. And we're kind of just, I don't know, open enough with each other to just let it flow and see what happens with the song. So yeah, I think the record, it's just a rock and roll record, and it's just very much like a capture of us in the studio at that time.
I mean, for me, from particularly from what I've heard from this this new single, I would say it's kind of, it's classic, but it's modernized. You know, it's classic rock, but for today. Like, if I was to move this kind of prime era of rock and make it in today's world, I would probably say that's what you guys are now. Of course, you know, you've got this new single around the corner. Well, it'll be out by the time we release this episode, called Hold. Could you tell us a bit about this new single and kind of the meaning behind it, how it came about?
Well, how it came about, we had just been jamming, if I remember correctly. We'd just been jamming. There's a little studio up in Liverpool that we use in a repurposed school called Studio 5, which is amazing. I love the idea that this school is, you know, is no longer a school, so people have bought it out, and it's a, anyway. And we just finished a rehearsal session for pre-production for something. Can't remember what it was. And we had an hour left of studio time, and it was like, that, should we call it a day, or should we use the hour? And then I think Joe laid that beat down.
That riff, and I remember Joe very distinctively. He everyone I've ever played that riff with always plays just like a standard straight 4/4 beat on it, and Joe did the push on the snare, and I don't know why, it just gave it some extra life, and everyone was like, I don't know, just captured the energy, which is kind of what writing songs is about, isn't it? Capture that energy in the room, and it flows. And you locked yourself away in the corner writing those lyrics, and all of a sudden it flew together.
And funny enough, actually, was I had this kind of idea of what I wanted to write the song about. I can't remember what it was. And I wasn't quite kind of hitting it. And then Joe said, when we get to that stop, I feel like that lyric has to be Hold On Me. And I was like, bingo, I've got it. And then the paper got crunched up and thrown away, and it just, the whole thing just came out. And, you know, an hour before, that song didn't exist. And I think that I quite like that that's the lead single. Do you know what I mean? Like, that song was like written in an hour. Obviously, we developed it. We didn't just write the thing in an hour and then it was done. Yeah. But like, the idea that it was there, like the nucleus of it was there, like, and I'm going to say it was about 85% done on it in that hour. And it was probably the quickest song we've ever written.
And the newest on the record, right?
And it's the newest on the record, yeah.
Interesting. Of course, you've mentioned it a couple of times there. Do you have an album in the pipeline? Do you have something coming around the corner?
I'd say it's somewhere in between an EP and a full album. Lengthwise, it's the same kind of length as those old LPs from the 60s, 70s. But I think in today's day and age, it would be classed as an EP. We just call it the record because classed as an EP because it's what, 6 tracks?
Yeah.
Am I allowed to say that?
Yeah. I mean, it's either like a long EP or a short album, isn't it? I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, it depends on the length, I suppose.
I've heard that before.
Because, I mean, I would say, like, for example, Rava Sun's new record, Lightbringer, that's only got 6 tracks on it.
Yeah.
Right.
But it's classed as
a record. Yeah.
Oh, that's funny, isn't it?
So I would assume that it's something to do with length.
Yeah.
But you know what, man? If it was me calling the shots, I would much prefer to do shorter records and more of them than just be like, because you can't get people to, you can get people to sit through an entire series on Netflix, but ask them to listen to 10 songs. It's like you've pissed on a Christmas dinner. Do you know what I mean? It's like, my God, do you know what I mean? It's not that long. So I would prefer to do less, but more of them, you know?
I think there is something in that. I mean, I've spoke to a couple of different people and they were like, I quite like having kind of a snappy album, an album that's kind of in and out, like, I don't know, half an hour. But so do you, for this EP or whatever you want to call it, are we looking at like next year? Are we looking tentatively at something?
Well, we think there'll be another one before, like another single before the end of the year.
Mm.
I don't like saying, like, because the way the industry moves, you know what I mean? Like, so much happens, so much changes, that I don't want to go, yeah, 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 definitely, and then big nothing bang. Happens, yeah. You know?
Then you're a
liar. I've heard that before, I know. So yeah, we think there's going to be another track before the end of the year.
What are fans going to see more of, kind of a similar vein of Hold, or is there going to be some variety on there? Is it, are you guys going to kind of change it up a little bit, do you think?
There has to be light and shade, man. There has to be light and shade. I think, not to kind of have a go at anyone, but I've been on a lot of bills and I've seen a lot of bands, and I've gone, wow, this is just like, if you think of Zeppelin, man, like you go to a Zeppelin gig back in the day and it wasn't for 2 hours. I mean, they did sit down and play acoustic and all that kind of thing. There has to be that for me on a record. Otherwise, why bother releasing more than 2 or 3 tunes? Yeah. Do you know what I mean? If you're just going to say the same thing over and over again. So yeah, there's light and shade on there, man. It's got to be.
I think you're right on that, though. I feel that a lot today, it's easy to fall into the trap of, like, if you get a hit single or something quite successful, you'd be tempted to kind of go, well, people like that, so we'll do more of that. And then
Clapton says, doesn't he, like, having a healthy disregard for what the audience wants? Because if it's good, they'll like it, you know. I think we always, like, there's been times where we've been writing stuff and we've gone, we've said this, get rid of it, you know, and it's gone, and you start over. Or, like, I've never just reached out to Orson.
I think the moment you think you have a formula for writing a hit is, you know, probably time to mix it up, because nobody can guess what a hit is, and you're probably writing songs for the wrong reason, you know. Trying to guess what people latch on to and what people will see something in is impossible. Do you know what I mean? It's like, you have to write a song for yourself, and then whoever jumps on board with it is a bonus.
I think, like, most of the time when I'm writing stuff, lyrically more than anything, is it's just kind of what I need to say there and then. And then melodically, what I'm usually trying to do is impress these guys. Like, I'm trying to get these guys to go, oh, that's good, you know. And I think that's the interesting thing, especially even live. Do you know what I mean? Like, when we're playing live, everyone throws bits in, and what was that, you know? And then you come off stage going, oh, you've never done that before, man. What was it? And it's, I don't know. Do you know what I mean? Like, it just happened. So that, I think, I don't think, do people think like that? Do people think we've got this formula, do you think? I'm interviewing you now, man.
I feel not every, well, for me, I feel that the top tier of bands certainly don't. But I think that some people, after a while, maybe when you get about 4 or 5 albums deep, you can kind of subconsciously fall into it. I think that an upcoming band, if you get a hit, I think it's very tempting to go, oh, I want a bit more of that. You know, like...
Yeah, my PRS count's looking pretty good at the moment. Let's do another one of those.
I don't know. I think there's a temptation. You know, like, you can see it in their eyes, and I'm like, oh, go on, like, don't. Like, you've just won on your thing. Yeah. At the time of this release, it won't be long until you guys head out on the road for a few shows with Jared James Nichols and DeWolf. How did that kind of opportunity present itself?
Jared's manager messaged us on Instagram.
That easy?
Yeah, I mean, I've known Jared since 2018. I met him in Nam.
Not Vietnam.
It sounds a bit like you're having a bit of a flashback there.
But yeah, I jammed with him a bunch of times. He'd been over. I think Jared just wanted, like, a bunch of friends he had over here on the different shows. It seems like he followed a different guest and friends on. So yeah, I mean it was that simple.
Interesting.
And that'd be fun. So yeah.
And we got some headline shows around that as well. We're playing Sheffield on the 12th, Liverpool on the 13th, and then we're ending the run at Paper Dress in Hackney in London. So yeah.
Obviously at the minute, in terms of stuff that you've released, people will be able to hear that one single. So in a Silver Roller show, or even a support with Jared and co, what can people expect?
Chaos. I think what they can expect is honest, like an honest performance. I think, you know, if the band is had a tough day, I think all that frustration will come out on stage. You know, if the band's feeling mellow, you'll get a bit more of a cerebral. Maybe, you know, we could even do like BB King and sit down, you know. it'd be honest, man. You know, it's I think they're always honest. You know what I mean? Like we opened for Cold Stairs. When was that, man?
July,
was it?
Yeah.
Wow. And we go in, it was like a it was almost like a theatre room, and had like the proscenium arch, I think it's called, and it was big old stage, and everyone was buzzing, you know what I mean? Everyone's like, wow, look at that, you know what I mean? Look at that big old theatre stage, and then everyone gets on stage and tears it apart, because everyone's all excited to get on stage. And then the night after, we went and played in, where did we play? Night Owl in London, and then it's a club show, totally opposite kind of setup with barely any room, but then you've got this room full of hippies and rock and roll fans making an energy that you go, right, well, I'm feeding off that now, so I'm going to give it back. So I think it's just honest, isn't it? Like, it's just... Yeah. And then me and Aaron fall over each other at some point.
I get hit with a mic stand.
You'll get hit with a mic stand.
I think it's like the whole Jagger line when he said, like, you know, the crowd has to kind of throw a ball to the band, and the band has to throw it back to the crowd, and everybody kind of passes the ball back and forth to kind of create a good night and a good vibe for everybody. And what the vibe of that room is kind of very much dependent on how the band are and how the crowd are and how everybody just comes together, really. So yeah, it should be fun.
I mean, I feel that, you know, supporting Jared and DeWolf is like a perfect audience for you guys. I mean, I think that that's kind of that market, I think, of people, they'll definitely dig you, you know. I think,
well, we thought the same thing when the offer came through with Jared and DeWolf. It was like, wow, there's two bands that we've wanted to kind of hit the road with or play shows with, and they're going to be in the same room as us, you know. So well, we'll be in the same room as them, so yeah, it's very cool, man. Yeah, I think it's going to be a very vibey tour, you know.
Good question for kind of returning guests. If you could kind of guest on an album, or even kind of be around a record at the time of its making, what would that album be,
Jeremy?
Oh, if I could, is that two questions or have I got to pick one?
Well, you can choose, or you can divide it into things. I mean, you've got the control in this kind of scenario.
If I was going to watch an album being made, that would, without any hesitation, repetition, etc., it'd be Fathers and Sons by Muddy Waters. I wouldn't do a thing. I'd just sit back and be shut up and watch the master at work with that band, because that record for me is just biblical. If I could guest with someone, I think the obvious would be Paul Rodgers, but I couldn't sing in front of him, man. Do you know what I mean? I'd just be like, wow, here's what you do, but really badly.
It's tough.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Aaron Keelock. I'd like to guest with him.
I think to watch a record, mine would have been Exile on Main Street. Just because I think that's like the record that encom- Like, it basically captured everything that rock and roll was in the how it was made. It was Keith making Keith's record. I think on a lot of the other records, they made hits and every album had a hit, and you kind of could tell they were making albums with hits on. And that was kind of Keith's record, where he sat up till 4 a.m. writing and drinking wine and whatever else. And so, yeah, I think I'd have picked that. But to guest with, I don't know.
It's a lot of choice. Is there a guy or an artist that you look at and you think they would just be cool to kind of hang around with or be around? Like, you can wander into a room and insert person will be there.
You know what? Actually, I'd love to have a jam with Slash, because he's played with everyone, hasn't he? Quite literally, he's guested on so many records and that, and I just feel like he'd be one of those guys that if you went, hey, let's jam some Hendrix, he'd be on it. If you said let's jam some this, some that, I think he'd just know it. You know what I mean? I think Slash would be one of those dudes. But then I'd want to kind of, I don't know, I'd want to put some like mad organ player with him and get rid of like a second guitar player and then maybe like percussion or something. Lucas Nelson, man, I'd love to have a jam with him.
Yeah.
If I find somebody else to be my lover. Yeah, man.
Is there an artist of kind of like today, like a new kind of band or a new one that you'd go for?
Scott Holiday and Jay. I'd love to sing with Jay and watch him absolutely wipe the floor with me. You know, Luke. Yeah, I'd say if you or Black the guys from Black Smoke would blow that absolute gents to a man. You know, love Blackberry Smoke. I love Rival Sons. Yeah. Love Lucas Nelson. So any of them, I think.
I have heard through the grapevine that Blackberry Smoke are one for pranking, believe it or not. So you if you were in that scenario, you might find some things going wrong. I have heard. I mean, I won't steal his kind of thing, but you know, Brad from a band called Massive.
Yeah, I do know Brad.
They did like a few dates and a few tours with them. And apparently on the last night of their tour, they walked out and they had found that they were they'd somehow managed to draw some phallic symbols all over.
Yeah. I've heard the story, man. Yeah. I toured with Brad years ago and I was
It's a small world, but it is.
I'm kind of jealous. They just bought me dinner on the last night.
Really? They didn't do anything?
Well, they bought me a nice meal.
I mean,
but what was it?
I didn't get any drawings on my
shirt. What you were eating.
It
raises. Did you see it getting made, though? My question is nice.
It raises the question, you know. Yeah, maybe they were waiting and you just ate it and just walked away and they were like... well, thank you very much, guys. And obviously, if people want to catch that debut single, Hold, you can click on that via the link in the description below. And if you want to check them out live, again, a link will be in the description below for the support slot tour with Jared James Nichols and DeWolf, and for a few of these select shows that you're going to be doing on your own.
Awesome.
Thank you very much.
Oh, actually, can I add? Oh,
go on.
Buddy Guy would top the list for everyone.
Really?
I'd jam with Buddy Guy over anybody, yeah. Yeah.
That's the top tier choice. Is there a reason?
He's the last of the great Chicago bluesmen, isn't he?
Yeah.
And he's Buddy Guy. he's the guy that Hendrix stole from, you know. Need to say more.
Drop in that bombshell.
Thank you. True though, isn't it? It's true. There's videos of Hendrix in the audience of Buddy Guy watching Buddy play his guitar behind his head and stuff.
Mm.
There you go. Yeah.